We elves try to stick to the four main food groups: candy, candy canes, candy corns, and syrup.
Live from the sweetest place in the world, and that's just because Joe's mom lives here, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey everyone, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and okay, you're on to me. I am sucking up to Joe's mom because she's promised that if I watch my language, I could get ungrounded and actually get to avoid the basement for a few days. Wouldn't that be awesome? Speaking of awesome, here to help us all create the awesome future we want, the founder and CEO of Pop Sugar brand, Lisa Sugar. Also, headlines on finding extra money in your investments and avoiding tax bombs, a hotline call, letters from the mailbag, my trivia, and much more. And here they are, two guys who could never watch their f***ing horrible language. Oh, God, it. Oh, no, I failed already. Welcome, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
Hope everybody enjoyed their weekend. I am Joe Salcihi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And guess what? OG across the table from me.
Yes, I am.
Guess what?
Beautiful day in paradise.
I have a voice.
Yeah, I was going to say that a little bit earlier, but I didn't want to jinx it in case it was a recording that I was listening to.
No, I think, I think this is the first show in forever where I actually sound somewhat normal. So thanks everybody for hanging in there. We got a great show today. Lisa Sugar, as Doug said, on the show today. The Pop Sugar websites, big, big pop websites. And it's cool to hear because reading her book, Power Your Happy, she talks a lot about just chasing what you know, you hear this all the time, follow your passion, right? And to some degree, I think that's baloney. But if you do it the way Lisa did it, I think that there's a lot people are going to learn there today. So we've got that. We got headlines. But you know, we got first, OG. We got two fantastic opportunities for people because if you haven't been to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money, well, guess what you're missing out on? You're missing out on that checking account that stinks that you have right now that could be a lot better. You're missing out on much better savings accounts. You're missing out on getting your debt strategy together to the tune of saving $450 just by restructuring your stuff. StackyBenjamins.com/magnify money. I absolutely love the discussions I have with people about Magnify Money and about our other sponsor, SoFi. StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. You know, those student loans, OG, those can be ugly, man. Those can be ugly. Student loans hitting the news again. And as we heard on last Monday's FinCon show, and the student loan people, really weird guys like Jay Fleischman and Jeffrey Troll over at Student Loan Hero. Just this, a lot of ugliness in student loans. So if your student loans look ugly, head to stackybenjamins.com/SOFI and get those babies cleaned up, lower interest rate, consolidated, bam. They also do personal loans. And if you use our link, they'll give you $100 that you can probably send to your favorite podcaster, right?
I like that idea.
I think that's what you got to do. But what we got to do is get into some headlines because, man, we got an action-packed show for you today. So let's move.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
Our first headline comes to us from financialplanning.com, the place where all of us money geeks hang out, OG. Don't you just spend your day at financialplanning.com?
Well, I spend my morning there, but
that's right.
That's like the gym for my brain.
You're generally there without pants.
Which is weird because no one else is there at that time.
It's so strange. Joseph Lasanti wrote this piece. He said, the past few years have not been good for people seeking income from their investments. Oh, by the way, I should read the title too, shouldn't I? I do got a little rust there over the weekend. Holy cow. This headline is looking for extra income, consider more than current yield. And that attracted me, OG, because as he says in that first line, yields have not been good for people looking just to get a little something from their investments.
Yield from dividends or stocks, or what is he talking about there?
Any,
just in general. Huh?
Just in general, it's kind of sucked, hasn't it?
Well, I mean, it's all relative. I guess it depends on when you first started investing. If you started investing this year, then yeah, it might be a little light.
Well, that's
might feel a little light.
That's interesting, and that's why I like this article that we'll link to in the show notes at stackybenjamins.com. He says, the last time the 10-year T-note regularly yielded, easy for me to say, 4% was before the 2008 financial crisis. Even if the Fed tightens again by the end of the year, bond yields are likely to move up only slightly. So he said, okay, that stinks. So then people are chasing stocks with high yields. He goes, the problem there is you look at some of the stocks or dividend ETFs and some of the things that those are filled with, because mutual funds especially love to cheat, right? There's danger there that people don't know about. But he says, before you go and you start making changes to your portfolio, look at this measure, and I didn't get this measure at first when he started talking about it, yield on cost. And I thought, yield on cost? And he says that's indicated dividend over cost of investment. Look at that. I'm like, well, duh. I mean, doesn't that make sense? And he says, what people do is they look at the current dividend of a stock and they decide to sell it without realizing how much the stock has risen from the price that they originally paid. So their yield to the price that they paid actually, in a lot of cases, could be fairly high. He says, as an example, if you bought Sherwin-Williams, North America's largest paint manufacturer, back in 2006, you look at it today, the yield is 1.2%. So that doesn't look phenomenal. There's lots of companies that will give you 1.2. But if you bought it in 2006, your yield to cost is 6.6%. That's an awfully good yield based on the price you bought it at. And you see people make this mistake all the time. They'll look at the current yield on a stock they own. They'll sell it off because they think it's not that good. Might be better than you think.
I look at yield as just another form of return of capital or investment return, however you want to kind of characterize it. Some companies decide to use dividends to reward their shareholders, and some companies decide to use their profits to reinvest in the company and add more growth. In some respects, isn't all dividends just another form of capital appreciation that gets returned to shareholders a little bit faster or a little bit more directly?
I see what you're saying. A dollar's a dollar. Don't get hung up on how you get the dollar.
It's all rain, right? It doesn't matter if it comes down in chunks of ice or balls of snow or raindrops.
But you see people do this all the time, especially people chasing yield, you know, and a broker will play this game with people.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, if we're talking about slimy sales schemes, sure.
Oh, you got all the Sherwin-Williams stock. You don't need all that. I got this thing over here that pays 3.5% right now. But if the broker went back to the day they bought it, that's a 6.6% yield on the price. That's a good yield on the price you bought it at.
It's an interesting way to look at it, for sure. I didn't know where you were going with this. And when I said it right out the gate, you looked at me like, how do you stop?
Stop it. You're so annoying.
Yeah.
You put the idiot in idiot savant. I'll
take that as a compliment.
I don't know if that was very nice.
Oh, it was terribly unnice.
It was a little salty for a Monday morning.
That's okay. I don't mind. I'll still be your friend.
That's very nice of you after what I did there. Yeah.
I'm a nice guy.
Our next article comes to us from MarketWatch.com. And this one written by Jerry Golden. Jerry says, the tax bomb and your retirement plans. That's a headline that'll grab me, huh? Tax bomb and my retirement plan. Says, in the retirement plans and other savings of every unsuspecting investor resides a surprise package from the Internal Revenue Service that could blow up your retirement planning process. I call it a tax bomb. What's funny is that all this article talks about, OG, is that Stephen Covey, in his great book, Seven Habits of Highly Successful People, says that when you pick up a stick, you pick up both ends, right? And everybody just knows the end of the stick that they pick up when it comes to their IRA. When I put money into a retirement plan, I know how much I can put in and the fact that there's some great tax advantage today, maybe. But very few people consider, for every benefit you get today, there's a problem down the road. And if all you've done, all you've done is put money in your 401k your whole life, guess what? There will be a tax bomb waiting for you at the end, because all that money is going to get taxed when you take it out.
Part of retirement planning, especially if you start early enough, is identifying what those hurdles might be or those restrictions might be, and starting to plan for those while you're in your 30s and 40s and 50s, as opposed to knocking on retirement's doorstep at 60 and saying, well, It is what it is. And frankly, even when you get to 60, you can make some changes to kind of offset that a little bit. Really, that bomb doesn't explode until somewhere in the, you know, your early 70s, of course. But I think effective retirement planning is also going to include effective tax planning.
Yeah, the thing that you and I love to talk about is this concept of the tax triangle, where there's really, I mean, there's lots of different ways that investments get taxed, but very generally speaking, some investments go in pre-tax, and when you pull them out, everything gets taxed. That'll be a 401k,
like your 403b. IRAs, your 401ks, 403bs, that sort of stuff.
To counter that, what a lot of people will use is something where money goes in after tax, but when you pull it out, that money is tax-free. And that could be municipal bonds. That could be Roth IRAs. That could be some forms of life insurance. And what's funny is both of those two sides of the tax triangle, because I can hear people yelling, life insurance, every single type of shelter has a downside. So when you put that money in pre-tax, OG, unless you're able to go in it with some of the rules, right, some of the exceptions, you can't take that money out until a specific date. So you're handcuffed with money that goes into a retirement plan or follow some IRS rule 72T, as an example, is one of those ways to get out of it. With money going in after tax and tax-free on the way out, that money also had problems. I mentioned life insurance. And as I said, people are yelling at the radio right now. You got to buy the life insurance.
Right.
And sometimes those policies aren't as good looking as the agent might make them seem, right?
Quite often.
In municipal bonds, even though that money is supposedly tax-free, if you're somebody who's going to be attracted to municipal bond, you might be a retiree. And guess what? If you're getting Social Security, interest on municipal bonds is included when figuring out the taxation of your Social Security benefits. So
everything's got to give me a gotcha.
Yeah, that's ugly.
No free lunch.
That's right. Roth IRAs, you got to keep the money in there. The interest has to stay in there for a certain amount of time. So ugliness there. And then because we have those two playing yin and yang, then on the third part of the triangle, it's money that has no tax advantage going in. It's with after-tax money that's already been taxed in your paycheck. When you pull it out, no special tax treatment, just going to be taxed on the, you know, dividends, gains, whatever it is, and then maybe taxed along the way. And that's a regular brokerage account, your savings account, all that stuff. And you really, you've got that one, OG, for flexibility. So where the other two have those three, I like lining those three up. If you're listening to this, if you can just think in your head, how much money do I have in each of those three parts of the triangle? You can start to see some of those problems developing, OG.
And there's not a right or wrong way to do this over your entire life. It changes year to year. You know, where you are from a tax standpoint this year may predispose you to saving money into your pre-tax accounts. Maybe you're at high income this year because of a bonus. And in the future years, maybe your income's not going to be as high. And so something like a Roth contribution or the Roth portion of the 401k would make more sense. You have to look at this on an ongoing basis and not just, you know, the day you retire or 5 years before you retire. Tax planning is an ongoing thing, just like financial planning. You want to evaluate it every year.
Yeah, we got that question in the mailbag recently about which account should I save into. Man, if you set up that tax triangle right from the beginning, how great is that? Because then you give yourself some tax advantage today, some tax advantage tomorrow, and much, much more flexibility to do whatever you want later.
Right.
I think the lessons today, number one, thinking about selling that stock, maybe don't look at the current yield. Maybe look at the yield first from the time that you bought it. That might be a better measurement. And then that tax bomb in your retirement, take a look at the tax triangle to see how that might help you tax plan better in the future. All right, enough about taxes and investments, OG. Let's talk entrepreneurship, huh? You ever dream about actually making money doing that thing that you really want to do?
I live the dream every day, buddy.
You keep thinking, today's the day I get out of the basement and I get to actually operate the lemonade stand out
work
in front of the
short
house.
Short order cook.
That's
How
right.
How about that commercial with iced tea and lemonade? Have you seen that Geico commercial?
I love that commercial.
That's so fantastic.
Hey, iced tea.
Whoever thought that up.
Yeah, for people that haven't seen it, Ice-T the rapper sitting with a couple kids at a lemonade stand, and people are driving by going, "Hey, Ice-T." And Ice-T keeps yelling, and is great. He's got that great voice, man.
Yeah. No.
Lemonade. Hey, Ice-T. Lemonade. Just amazing. Well, speaking of Ice-T and lemonade, let's talk sugar. Because Lisa Sugar, who is the founder, creator, and CEO of the Pop Sugar websites, where they talk celebrities, fashion. They even did Pop Sugar Australia, OG, get this, did a review of Top Podcast and had us as Top Finance Podcast on Pop Sugar. That was several years ago since they've done one of those, but we made that list. That was pretty cool. Yes, and today, Lisa Sugar is going to pay for it. She's coming down to the basement to talk about how she created this empire and how you can go after that dream that you've got yourself. Lisa Sugar joins us in the basement. Welcome.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm so glad you could make it on the world tour here. We're at the back end. I'm glad to see that the book's doing really well.
Yes, it is. We're very excited about how well it's doing.
Now, early on, you say that you stayed up late watching late night television. What were your favorite shows to watch when you were staying up late, Lisa?
I loved Letterman. I was a big fan of Letterman, you know, even when he was on the Late Late Show. So I was pretty much always watching Letterman.
Yeah. And what did your parents think? As I was reading that, I'm thinking, did they think this is a future genius who's going to create a big online empire, or you should be getting to bed?
No, I think they thought I was reading a lot, which I was doing that too. But once I was really done with like all my homework or reading, or if I didn't feel like reading anymore and I really just needed to zone out, David Letterman would help me relax.
Yeah. But then for you, it wasn't David Letterman, though, that changed everything. It was a different show, Dawson's Creek.
Yes. So as I got older and finally, you know, went away to college, and actually it was my boyfriend, future husband, who was working at J. Crew, and they were going to dress this cast. It was a brand new show, and I got to see the pilot ahead of time, and he brought it home and he's like, "You got to watch it. It's the new Beverly Hills 90210. So of course he had me with that pitch, and I watched it. And at the end, I mean, just the writing was so genius and clever, and the cast was, you know, so fresh and young, and the way they spoke to each other was so different than 90210. And at the end of that, I just immediately knew I had to somehow figure out a way to get into this world of creating content.
But that's funny, because most people would watch a show like that and they would just be, you know, they would be excited about the fact that they found their next love, their next show. But for you, it was this whole transformation.
It was everything, because, you know, the writing was so good. The music was so good. They were dressed so well. The way they, everything, it just spoke to me so differently than a lot of other, you know, shows that were out there. It was really a different level. And that's when I was kind of like, okay, people can get so creative now. And I mean, that was years ago. And what we see now on TV, even with like a Mr. Robot, I feel like if that was what was brought to me back then, that would have been the show. I would have been like, I got to get into this world.
So you were headed this way no matter what. It seems like a lot of this was market analysis. You know, I mean, when people create business plans, they talk about analyze the market so you know where you want to be. And it seems to me, Lisa, like you had an early idea right away, not exactly where you want to be, because you talk about that a lot, but kind of, I know that my niche is right in this area.
Yeah. I mean, I love being entertained. And so I love, you know, whether it was stories that I was reading or TV shows that I was watching, but I didn't think that I actually had the mind to write a really great screenplay or write the next, you know, Catcher in the Rye. But I knew I needed to be a part of it somehow. And I just didn't know what that meant yet until I actually started writing Pop Sugar every day.
So watching all these shows, do you think that that was a big part of who you are now?
Definitely. I mean, I got to grow up in the 80s with some of the most amazing, cheesiest,
me too,
fascinating story, you know, movies ever. TV was so different then. And I think that just even being able to see how it has evolved over the decades is awesome. Like if I just came into this world now, and there's just so much clutter and so much stuff that's not as genuine as it was, I think, back 20 years ago, I've been able to see that evolution. And I think that it's helped a lot to figure out where I want it to even go.
And where is that? Where do you want Pop Sugar to be on the scale of all things entertainment?
Yeah, well, when I first started, it was really because I felt like there was no place that spoke to me, whether it was a magazine, a blog. You know, blogs were very new at the time. The internet wasn't even really invented when I went to college, so I didn't even think about something like that. But when I did end up starting to write Pop Sugar, it was because I felt like there was no magazine that spoke to me a little bit about this and that. ultimately, I want to continue to be talking to people in that way where they feel like it's their girlfriend talking to them. It's just somebody you're sitting down in, you know, a basement or at a coffee shop or wherever you may be having a great conversation with your girlfriend, but you've learned something every time, right? Like you're taking something away from the conversation, whether it's like a great new mascara that you have to try, a great new TV show that's amazing. There's always a takeaway that you're learning about. So we like to talk about, you know, inspiration to action. It's like we want to just help share everything that we know with our friends. So I want PopSugar to continue to do that, whether it ends up being through the site, through more video, through scripted comedy in the future, who knows? You know, there's definitely also a lot more global reach that we'd like to have. So for us, you know, as far as the future, it's definitely more of everything that we're already doing.
I think a lot of Mary Poppins about a lot of sugar makes the medicine go down, right? Is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we've always had this really positive attitude and it's very welcoming. People want that. They want, you know, they want advice and they want to be, you know, helped. And at the same time, once they get help, they feel like they want to, in return, that pay it forward concept of like, that was really great. Now that I learned this, I want to tell my friends. And that's what PopSugar really wants to help people do.
It's funny because we're talking about PopSugar, but really in your book, you're talking about what you should do. And it's kind of is the same thing, Lisa. You talk a lot about listening to your inner voice.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that, you know, there are so many clues along the way, even for myself, that I should have picked up to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. But like I said, I didn't really even know until I was in my late 20s. You know, I wouldn't have known at 18 when I was in college declaring a major that that's what I was going to do. So I think it was really important for me to pick up on clues along the way, hearing my voices of like, I don't like this part of my job. I like this part of my job. And how can I take away the bits and pieces that I like and leave behind the pieces that I don't like?
You had jobs in high school. You said that your parents were very diligent. You had a job every summer. You didn't describe what those jobs were, though. I want to hear about some crappy jobs that Lisa Sugar had.
Yeah, I mean, it was everything from, you know, camp counselors where I was like, well, I was a really great camper, a really bad counselor. Like I did not make the transition well. And I think it was because I was around people I had been going to camp with forever. So then I decided to go be a camp counselor for younger kids because I thought I wanted to even teach when I, you know, got out of school. And then I realized that didn't really resonate well either. So I went more the traditional route of, you know, working in a retail store, working at Urban Outfitters, folding jeans for hours upon hours, which I also learned a lot there. I worked as a messenger for a law firm in DC where I would run around the city dropping off documents all day long, you know, bits and pieces of things that were fun because of the people I was with or the skills that I had learned, but day to day, you know, things that helped me figure out what I didn't want as well.
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask was which one of those is the worst job you've ever had?
Well, it's hard to figure out the worst. I mean, for me, the camp counselor thing didn't work, whether the age group was, you know.
But that just wasn't for you. Yeah.
Because I wanted to be a camper. Like I really didn't want to actually tell people what to do. I wanted to be doing the arts and crafts. So I couldn't figure out how to make that transition. But, you know, a messenger isn't necessarily a fun job, but you get to explore around the city. I think for me, that actually just made me realize I don't want to work in a law firm or in Washington, D.C., which is where I grew up. Because it was so boring that, you know, the offices were closed offices. Everything was so quiet. It just was, you know, everybody's dressed up in suits all day. It was definitely not a world that I saw myself venturing into as I got older.
It doesn't seem to me that quiet would suit you.
No, it doesn't. I mean, our offices are actually surprisingly quieter than you'd think. A lot of people, when they come visit, because everyone is really so heads down writing, but you know, obviously we all stop and talk a lot and there's lots of occasions for us to be very rowdy and have a lot of fun. And the seating is all very open. I mean, from the first office we even had, there was no closed office. There was one closed office that was my daughter's playroom because we started the company right when she was born. So I brought her in and that's where she would nap and play while we would work. It was like everything has always been an open seating.
I want to talk about that more, the genesis of PopSugar, in a minute. But first, how did you score the internship at Fox? Because that really kind of was how the ball started rolling downhill.
Yeah, that was one of those things where my boyfriend, now husband, was living in New York. He was doing J. Crew's website. And I got to go up during the summer before going back to college. So I would live with him going into my senior year. Really, it was one of those like friend of a friend of a friend who got my resume. And I was just fortunate enough that they, you know, hired a gazillion interns and I got to be one of them. I did get really lucky in the sense that it was an internship in PR versus another production assistant, because there was like an army of production assistants, which is a great job to get if you want to be a producer. But in my case, I didn't know. So they kind of just stuck me anywhere. And I got to work one-on-one with somebody, which was nice because I really got to learn more of an office setting situation versus kind of running errands and running around. So that was really the, you know, luck of, you really have to ask for help too. I mean, I really knew very few people in New York, but I was like any family friend, any cousin, any like remotely like, you know, four off person that I could find that knew anybody who might be in an industry that I could get help in, I reached out to, and then I did get lucky with getting that internship.
And then you decided, I would love for you to tell this story because it was a great part of the book because you were sure you wanted to go into entertainment. So then you decided, I'm going to go work for this talent agency. Do you mind telling the talent agency story? Because this got creepy.
Yeah. So this was, you know, a good friend from high school who I had gone to camp with for many years and really nice guy. And I had just gotten engaged. And he said to me before I even started any of the interviews, don't wear your ring. And I immediately was turned off. I was like, wait a minute, why? Who gives a about the fact that I got engaged, right? But he immediately said, you know, you're coming in, there's like, you know, 12 positions open. Everybody wants this job. There's like a, you know, 1,000 people applying for it. You're already up against like so many hard decisions. And if they see somebody else who's sort of like young and hungry, you know, they're going to go with them without the ring. So that was already a major turnoff for me. And it was one of those situations where you go in and you have 7 rounds of interviews. And I had a typing test and all this stuff. I'd already been through like 4 rounds and I still had 3 to go. I knew as cool as this might have been, or as wonderful as it would have been to get a step closer into entertainment faster, maybe, there was something that wasn't sitting right with me.
Yeah.
And it also reminded me a lot of the DC firms where I had gone, where everybody was in these closed door offices and, you know, it didn't have that fun energy that I think I was hoping more so than the atmosphere there.
You ended up at an advertising job, and I'm wondering, that's got to help you today, that background. Absolutely. A little bit with Pop Sugar.
I can't recommend ad agencies enough. I mean, I think that I brought so many friends in too, friends that were a year younger than me or whatever. It was such a great training ground for just out of college type of job, because you learn everything about being in a client service business, working with peers, you know, all different levels of people and, you know, basic computer skills, basic presentation skills. You really get to learn a lot of, like, to me, ad agency after college is like the best, you know, first job 101 you could really have. When I was actually interviewing at the talent agency, I went in for an interview at Young and Rubicam, which is where I started. And it was 4 really smart women who interviewed me. They all seemed like they genuinely liked each other. It was a casual, fun setting. And they gave me 24 hours to decide if I wanted the job. And then I was supposed to go back for my next round of interview with the agents. And I was just like, do I want to go back for 3 more rounds of this or just jump in with these women who seem to really be enjoying each other and their job? And I just was like, let's do it. Let's just get started.
Yeah, but that's such pressure, though. I mean, 24 hours.
You know, it was at a time where it was like the dot-com crazy and everybody was hiring, you know, a lot. And people were leaving every day because as soon as you had 6 months experience, you were like golden to get like a promotion already, which was silly. Times are different.
No, they're much different. When you started Pop Sugar then, so you're working and then on the side, you just start writing. How did Pop Sugar come to be?
Yeah. So when I moved to San Francisco, I decided to stay in advertising because even though I knew that I really wanted to be in some sort of writing or entertainment type job, I didn't really have those options in San Francisco or network yet or anything. So I went back into advertising because I knew there was still a lot to learn there. And I went to this really amazing agency that was known as, it's sort of like the quintessential creative shop out here, and had an amazing time there. But like I said, I knew I didn't want to do this job forever. So as I was bored at my own job, I would go and I would check like magazine websites or blogs, or like I'd start going down the sort of, you know, internet rabbit holes that existed back then in 2005. And I still was like bored with the options, where I felt like there was just a lot of like mean negativity online. There wasn't anything really positive or fun and friendly. So I decided to just start writing because that was the number one goal, was just to get myself in the habit of writing every day.
So it wasn't, just to be clear, it wasn't for extra money on the side, because we get questions all the time on Stacking Benjamins about, well, maybe I should have a side hustle to make a little extra money. You did it just because you wanted a happier place.
This was me saying, okay, I know I've wanted forever to be a writer of some sort. How do I get started? what I was told was the hardest part is getting yourself in the habit of writing every day.
Yeah.
I just started, I wasn't even telling my friends at first. I just wanted to do it for myself to get myself in the habit. And I slowly told a handful of friends. They happened to be in PR for like movie studios and stuff. So very quickly they fell in love with the voice and the positivity of it. And they were like, this is great for my own clients. Come review our movies. And they would start feeding me information and I would start getting stuff early. So then people started to learn to come to Pop Sugar, whether it was for a review that was, you know, maybe a little bit more fun than the other reviews that were written. Or, you know, I started to find pictures and places where this was all pre-social stuff. So, you know, to find paparazzi pictures of where celebrities were on the weekends, you didn't have to wait until your magazines came in the mail anymore on a Friday. They were already up on Pop Sugar on, you know, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
How fun was that, chasing that stuff?
Oh, I love it so much. So much. It's so great. It was a lot of fun and it became extremely addictive. And then as soon as people really figured out that we were getting it first, or again, the way I was writing it in that positive way, it was pretty awesome.
There's lots of people that ask me all the time though about networking and about whether networking is important. And you kind of skipped over that in the story. And I want to go back because you had to cultivate these relationships with these people. You say I had friends that were at the studios, but you have a whole chapter in your book about networking and about how hard that is to develop. Talk about that for a second, because that's got to be a huge part of doing what you did to build Pop Sugar.
I think there's different forms of networking when it comes to building your jobs and what I did for Pop Sugar. So for Pop Sugar, what I had a network of people who already worked in sales for the networks and the magazines, because that was my job in advertising, was to work with these folks. So I got access to pilots at the TV studios and I got access to magazines from these sales reps that I had worked with for many years through my old job. As far as like, once I got to getting Pop Sugar up and running and going and getting access to being able to review a movie before it came out and got to go with, like, you know, the magazines and the local newspaper press to do reviews, that was just a handful of friends that I happen to have that I had met socially. So that was sort of, whether it was luck or a combination of, you know, meeting people that were just happened to be in PR and them liking us, you know, it's different than like going to an event and really initiating networking responsibilities for your next job.
Yeah, but I don't think so, Lisa. I mean, not to fight with my guest, but I really think that there was a line from your book about networking, because I hate networking too, but you have a line in your book where you say something about most of the network I do now is I try to meet interesting people and find out how we can work with them. And you seem to be somebody that if you're at a restaurant or you're with a group of people, you're just going to find out what people do. And for me, that's the fun way to network. Like that's a bundle of fun. And maybe it turns out to be something good later.
I think I'm less excited about forced networking.
Right, right.
You know, so like going to a networking event doesn't work for me, but yes, by all means, like randomly meeting people or friends of friends, I'm super excited to put dots together and connect. And as soon as anyone finds out, you know, we find that common ground, by all means, do I like dive in and just talk to them and figure out how we can work together in some way. And early on in the Pop Sugar days, you know, when you would go to an event alone, you'd start to see the same people over and over. So even just that friendly smile and then talking to them did help. What I would usually try to do is like befriend someone really early on so that, you know, they could at least be the person like I would have lunch with or, you know, sit with. Cause it's really hard to go to these things when you're really young and totally new at this stuff. So a lot of times I would really just sort of network to try to find my peers.
Right.
It wasn't necessarily like to climb some corporate ladder. It was more just like, who can I buddy up with so that I feel comfortable and look confident while I'm here. And that was really important early on and doing that. But yes, nowadays it's more of like when I meet somebody, what is it that we can get creative and do together? Because there are so many really fun people and companies out there that, and I get an opportunity to meet a lot of really great leaders that are running them.
But it doesn't surprise me that you love entertainment. And so in the entertainment industry, you go find people that you find are interesting. Yes. You know what I mean? Not even really thinking about the fact that this could be something good for my career. I thought that's phenomenal. What is next for Pop Sugar?
Right now I'm concentrating on the book. So still a lot of Power You're Happy, you know, stuff. I'm going to LA next week. We're doing an event there, which I'm really excited about. And then, you know, like I said, we're really more video, our video content. We're doing more tests with Facebook Live. Like every day it's something new. We've been doing a lot of career and finance advice, because between the book being so popular and just having an audience that really gravitates towards this type of content, we just launched Career and Finance. Latina has become really huge for us for the past year and a half. So that's really exciting to be able to continue to just reach out to, you know, new communities and new verticals 10 years later is great.
Do you get sad that you don't get time to write anymore?
What's been so great about the book is it's really been really good at helping me prioritize time to write again. And I think that sometimes it's okay to take a break from the writing, because when you're in it, you're so in it and you need to take a step back and get creative in different ways. So I really love the new skills that I've learned since I've stepped away from that. But I do really want to figure out a way to get it back into my routine, because I do miss it.
Yeah, it seems like it's therapeutic for you.
It is.
Well, for me, this book was very much a great career primer, and it's so conversational, but at the same time, the book has so much great advice. And it's the type of book that if anybody's thinking about changing careers or they're not sure, they feel lost. Like, you talk a lot about that at the beginning, about not really sure where you're going, but it all kind of went the way that it was supposed to. And to be okay with that, I thought was phenomenal advice. And at the end of every chapter, you've got a list of questions you should ask yourself to kind of cut to the bottom of it. The book is called Power Your Happy, Work Hard, Play Nice, and Build Your Dream Life. Thanks for hanging out, Lisa.
Thank you for having me.
Hey there, trivia fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. And man, isn't Lisa Sugar just the sweetest person? I'm sorry, I had to. It was sitting right there. It was just teed up. I had to take a swing. Okay, on to the trivia. With all of this talk about being happy, how about some trivia on happiness? A study has shown that happiness rises until you reach a certain amount of money, but then doesn't rise anymore except due to other factors. So my question is, exactly how much money represents that happiness barrier? I'll have the answer after I go upstairs and beg Joe's mom for one more chance to get out of the basement right after this break.
Hey, stackers, know what I love? I love saving money on things that aren't important. I'm not one of these people that wants to live in a cabin in the woods. Don't get me wrong. That's your goal. That's fine. But that's not something that I'm looking for. I'm looking to spend money on experiences that are fun and not spend money on stuff that I don't care about. You know one thing I don't care about? I'm not attached to my bank. So why do people stick with the same bank forever when banking has completely changed? Head to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money and you'll find out how much. You'll find out how badly your checking accounts performed. You'll find out how horrible that savings account you have is. You'll also find out that the debt products you're using are a big fat waste of time. So if you're going to consolidate your loans, why not do it the best way possible? If you're going to bank with anybody, why not make them the best possible? StackingBenjamins.com/magnify money. And if you're looking at those student loans and you're thinking, you know what, the interest rate is way too high on those, we've got a resource for you, stackingbenjamins.com/SoFi. That's spelled S-O-F-I. SoFi is the leader in marketplace lending, and it's always interesting how a company starts. And SoFi is no exception. Dan Macklin tells us the story.
Well, SoFi began at Stanford University about 5 years ago now. And really, it started because there were a few of us, and we were amazed at how much student debt was out there. And we were equally amazed at how expensive it was. We had classmates who were paying 7% and 8% for their loans. And we just thought, there has to be a better way. And we looked into it, and there wasn't a better way. No one was doing anything. It was just completely 100% government dominated and no options for people. So we started so that we could offer people better student loans.
I think it's a great lesson for any entrepreneur, don't you? Nobody's filling the hole that you want filled. Fill it yourself. And SoFi has done that. StackingBenjamins.com/SOFI. And if you use our link, they'll give you $100 when you refinance your student loans or take out a personal loan to refinance your credit card debt. How about that? An extra $100 just because you're smart enough to listen to us.
Hey everyone, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, back with some good news and your trivia answer. First, the good news. Joe's mom said she'd give me one more chance to watch my language. If I can avoid saying anything negative or foul, those are her words, for the rest of the episode, I'm free for the rest of the week. That means I'll get to go get the air in my tires rotated, finally, and maybe even keep sorting all the W's out of the M&M's jar. That's a job that'll keep you working right there. Who knew they put so many W's on M&M's? Why? There's a mystery we gotta solve. But isn't Joe's mom offer great news? So she's so nice. So let's get on to the trivia. Before the break, I asked about the happiness barrier, which a study revealed is the amount of money you can earn after which it no longer makes you happy. The answer? It turns out that every dollar until you reach about $75,000 makes you happier. And after that, not so much. You'll need other factors to make you happy after about 75K. Personally, getting out of this basement makes me happy. Oh, mother. I hope she didn't hear that.
That's actually some controversial research there, Doug, because there's been research since then that shows that it continues to go up, but not at as high a rate. I think Gretchen Rubin, when she was on, even talked about that, that you still can be happier. It just, there's a huge wall of happiness throwdown that happens at about 75 or 80,000 bucks.
Well, there's kind of a, like a worry factor.
Right.
I doubt that it's more happiness. It's less worry is probably it.
You're not worried as much about where the next meal's going to come from.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You could focus a little more long-term with your life.
A little bit.
Yeah. Absolutely. And by the way, thanks to Lisa Sugar for coming on. It's amazing. She started the sites with this big vision of having several different sites, which she has now, but also it wasn't about money. She knew she could make money doing it, and she had the background in advertising and the background in public relations, but it was mostly her love of all things celebrity and going after that. But with, I think she downplays her expertise personally. I think she's a little too nice. I think that ability to know advertising and about how advertising is going to make those websites work, I think that was a real key. And as you heard, I tried to keep getting her to talk about how that was. And she's just so nice.
Sweet.
Yeah. Like sugary.
Very.
Yes.
Very sweet. Yeah,
fantastic. All right. Let's power up the hotline, OG. It's the OG has just made your day because he has reconfigured his practice to accept new clients hotline.
Okay. You're getting better.
Yeah. Yes.
You'll probably have it perfect by the time that we,
by the time we have a sponsor.
Sponsor.
Right. Yeah. Right. New sponsor in the works, by the way, that is coming. Very exciting. But for now, let's take our hotline call. This one comes to us from our friend, Joe. Say, hey, Joe.
Hi, Joe and OG. This is Joe down in North Carolina. After buying at the perfect time back in 2007, we had a growing family. We attempted a short sale and ultimately went through a foreclosure. We've since relocated. Our credit took a ding initially, but our scores are both back up around 800, my wife and I. We have a private mortgage now that we need to refinance between 7 to 10 years of the final judgment going through. There was no deficiency judgment, but we're looking down the road. I've seen this reported on our reports as either a written off debt, a late payment still, depending on which report you look at. I've heard that this kind of stuff stays on your credit report for 7 years, but I'm curious if that's true for all the various ways that it may be reported, what we can do to ensure that happens, and what may remain after 7 years that we need to be concerned about when it's time to refinance the mortgage or when we eventually need to upgrade our vehicle situation or something similar. Any insights you can offer would be greatly appreciated, but I'm certainly not learning a thing. Thanks, guys.
I think that's the important part right there, Joe. Thanks for the question. Here is that, by the way, OG, is a testament to hanging in there because his credit is back up around 800, even though there's that black mark on his credit.
Yeah. A couple of things. First of all, it's about 7 years. It can be sometimes closer to 7.5 or sometimes a little bit before 7. It just really depends on the reporting agency. As you close in on that 7 years, it's worth sending letters to the credit reporting agencies, the TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax. Certified letters, of course, if you're communicating with the credit reporting agencies, return receipt requested. And start pestering them around that 6.5 year mark with a simple letter that says something like, "This is too old. It shouldn't be reported on my credit report anymore. Please delete it. You know, sincerely, Joe Smith, whatever, right? They'll send you a letter back and say, well, no, it still can be there. And a couple months later, send another letter. Eventually, you'll just wear on them and they'll delete it. I heard a couple of different things in here just as far as questions go. A lot of times with other loan type things, cars, credit cards, that sort of thing, it's just purely score driven. So I mean, I'm not suggesting you go buy a new car. Don't do that. But if your scores are at 800, yeah, and you got this ding that was 6-7 years ago, you'd have no concerns with that whatsoever. It's explainable. It's, you know, makes tons of sense as it relates to the way the economy was at that point in time. And time has worn off its impact, obviously, because your credit score.
And I understand the question, obviously, was around the credit score and how that might affect the credit score. But still,
it's not anymore, really.
When I heard the car and I heard the car loan, I was thinking, it's not part of the question, but I would still try to pay cash for that vehicle.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I would also add to the fact, you didn't ask about this, but there's no reason you have to wait, I don't think, to refinance your house. If you've got a crappy rate and an 800 credit score,
you're good.
I mean, get in the bank. Start applying for a refinance to get that rate knocked down. There's no, to my knowledge anyway, rule that says that you need to hang on to that private money loan for a long period of time. You'll have to explain the foreclosure. You know, a banker will look at it. They'll be able to see it and say, you know, tell us about this. But again, explainable. It happened darn near a decade ago now.
And it happened to so many people.
Yeah, you weren't the only one. So I would find myself on Magnify Money or SoFi website seeing whether or not you can get that refied here pretty quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. StackyBenjamins.com/SoFi, S-O-F-I. You don't get the $100, Joe, if you do a mortgage through them, but I would definitely have that on your list of people that I look at when I'm looking at refinancing that mortgage just because they're such a smooth company to work with. Great question, Joe. If you've got a question for the hotline, send those to stackybenjamins.com/voicemail. Even bigger for you, though, how about putting a bow on your personal financial situation by having the advisor of your dreams? Is that true?
I am quite dreamy.
Right. We have an asterisk. Your dream may vary.
Results of your dream may vary.
StackyBenjamins.com/OG to schedule an appointment with OG. We also get letters on this here podcast. And our next letter from the mailbag comes to us from our friend Dave. He says, "Hola, Joe. I was just remembering a few weeks back when the roundtable talked about basic income." And that is, just to go back to the story, OG, because you weren't on this episode. This was a roundtable episode. I brought up a story about how a Silicon Valley group is helping some families by giving them a basic income. It's a science experiment to see if people have just their basic necessities covered, can they now focus on creating better stuff for humanity, right? Mm-hmm. He said he actually agrees that it's way too early to be thinking about implementing a basic income, as I don't believe it would work in today's economy. And by the way, that was where most of the roundtable talked about, in today's economy, would it work? And we received, I'm going to make Dave's letter representative of a lot of letters. We'll call it a lot of letters on this topic. It says, however, I do think it's another, quote, crazy, wacky idea to keep an eye on for the future. Dave has written before about Bitcoin and about how that's a crazy, wacky idea to keep our eye on for the future. He says he knows Paula argued the classic Luddite fallacy. We've had technology booms in the past and still have jobs for everyone today. Keynes predicted 15-hour work weeks back in his day, and we seem to be working even more now than ever before. Paula and many of your guests are awesome and have created their own paths, but back in the 9-to-5 world, actually longer hours than that usually, there's plenty of evidence to say that technology did make less work for people. We fear not working, so we created jobs out of nothing. How many surveys are there about how much time employees waste at work, how often they visit Facebook or check Gmail or chat around the water cooler? People are wasting more time at work in part because there's less for them to do. Anecdotally, quite frequently, I've seen people quit jobs and not be replaced by the company. Why did they have a job in the first place? So Paula may be right. As a society, we may continue to force employment, but I don't think it's because we're finding new meaningful work for people to do. I think another possible outcome is we're seeing a bubble, one that might burst when driverless vehicles hit the road, or one that bursts much later. Either way, I think it's good for economists to be thinking about basic income and for Y Combinator to be doing their experiment in Oakland with basic income to learn about it. Worst case scenario, it's never used and they wasted a little bit of money. Best case scenario, it saves our asses. is always just another weird perspective on the future from me. Have a good one. I do think Dave's right that that is way out in the future. And I do like his premise at the end. I think technology has made life easier, and I do think it's replaced jobs, which means I think that there's value. If I'm listening to this and I'm thinking about jobs and thinking about the future, there's value in education, man. And education, as we've talked about on the show, education with a purpose, right? I don't know what I think about basic income, but I do know what I think about the competitive landscape. And if you want to have a job today, I'm not going to be somebody who's in a job that a machine can already do.
Easiest way to make sure you're employable is continue to provide value for other people in whatever form or fashion that manifests itself.
Interesting philosophical discussion, though, isn't it, OG?
Am I supposed to comment on philosophical discussions? I don't know that I'm qualified.
Yeah, I think that's the best answer of all. I don't think either one of us are qualified.
Yeah. To
answer that.
Intriguing.
I think basic income is out of our pay grade. We're guys that take the world the way it is today and say, how can you make it better?
Yeah.
You know,
Well, you got to plan for the future. You know, you got to look at your circumstances. And I believe that most people overplay the impact of other people to their situation and underplay their personal ability to make change in their own life.
Thanks for the letter, Dave. If you've got a note for the show, send those to me, joe@stackingbenjamins.com, and we will work toward answering your letter. I don't know that we really answered Dave's letter.
We didn't. We just...
No, no.
We listened to it.
We swung at Joe's, which was very nice. But thanks to both to Dave and to Joe. Once again, if you want to schedule an appointment with OG, that's stackingbenjamins.com/OG. Did I say that?
Yes, you did now.
I don't remember if I actually gave the link earlier. All right.
Twice.
All right. Well, see? Repetition. Good advertising. Lisa Sugar would be happy with me.
I'll be happy with you.
Thanks for listening to the show today, everybody. Thanks for all the great feedback that you've given us on iTunes, on Stitcher, wherever you listen. It's so great to receive emails from people telling us how much they like the show. Emails from people who are teachers who actually use some of the things we talk about in our show when they teach, which is amazing because we don't teach anything.
Yeah,
we're not qualified for that. But we're so glad that us entertaining ourselves, that we're able to bring some people along for the ride. So thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. Coming up on Wednesday, Lisa Peterson, she's got a story. She is a holistic life coach, had been a certified financial planner and realized she thought she had to get out of the business. And she had a few things tell her she had to get out of business. But she's going to start her segment on Wednesday with the most horrifying story we've ever had on the show. And I'm going to leave that there. How's that for a hook?
Love it.
See everybody.
All those cliffhangers.
Yes, that's right. Doug, what should we have learned today? Take it away, man.
So, what did we learn today? I think the biggest lesson came from Lisa Sugar. Looking for your happy place? Don't wait for someone to create it. You go create your own future. Maybe you too can create an online empire like Lisa. Here's another good lesson from today's show. Before you sell off investments because they aren't earning a high enough dividend, think about the dividend to purchase ratio. That might change your mind. But the biggest lesson? Do not rely on Joe's mom's awful hearing aid to save you when there's a deal on the table. That woman can hear like a bat. What? Oh, come on, lady. Get off my back. I didn't mean that in a bad way. I'm sorry. Special thanks to Lisa Sugar for visiting the basement. You'll find Lisa's book, Power Your Happy, wherever books are sold or on our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. Thanks to Joe's mom for accepting my apology about referring to her hearing aid like a bat. Sometimes I think she's batty, but I didn't mean that in this reference. I mean, oh, for God's sakes! Would you just stop listening to me? I can't control myself.
Welcome to the after show. For those of you new to the show, this is the part that doesn't exist. What happens on the after show stays in the after show. So those are the rules that we play by. We don't talk about it, but we do talk about a lot of stuff. And by the way, if you're here for more financial planning talk, that rarely happens on the after show. Sometimes we talk about movies. Today, I want to talk about my recent trip to Maine. And I want to say a big thanks to Jen, Claire, and Kara for hanging out with us. I love it when show listeners contact me that they're going to be close to us and we're able to organize a get-together. And we sat down, had this great dinner together. We talked about trips to New Zealand and trips to Iceland and putting on races in the Philly area and running and chaos. And it was a great dinner. You know when you meet people for the first time and you kind of feel like you've known them forever?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was what it was like the night before the marathon. So
that was your group, huh?
Yeah. Thanks again to Jen and Claire and Kara for hanging out with Cheryl and I. And it was funny. The second that we all broke up, we said our goodbyes and we had our separate ways, Cheryl said, "Those are our kind of people," which is really Stacking Benjamin's people, OG, our kind of people.
I think you're right about that.
But let's talk about Maine. Maine is our kind of state. Holy crap, is that a great place. It was amazing. And thank you, Maine, for bringing out the colors. Everybody in Maine said this year's colors are better than ever. The reds were just popping. I mean, it was amazing.
And you're talking about the leaves changing colors.
Yes. Yes. Okay. The fall colors. Because we don't really get that in Texarkana, as you know.
No, it just dies.
Yeah. Green to brown. Bam. A little yellow. We get some yellow. But fall here versus you and I are both originally Michiganders. Mm-hmm. And fall colors in Michigan, pretty damn good. And I told Cheryl halfway through the vacation, I said, I know I'm going to sound like a heretic. I think Maine's colors are better than Michigan's.
I drove this time of year several years ago. My wife and I drove across Pennsylvania to go to a wedding. And, you know, I mean, there's some hills there. They're not mountains per se, but some hills, you know. And it was pretty nice to see just kind of the rolling hills of Pennsylvania all covered in reds and yellows and orange colors. So I can imagine how nice it looked.
We drove down Highway 1. There, of course, is California Highway 1 on the West Coast, but U.S. Highway 1 on the East Coast. And amazing. Little town after little town. And you just want to get lost in these towns. And it's funny because not being from New England and seeing these picture postcards where you're driving along the coast and you see all these, you know, New England fishing boats in a little closed harbor with these church steeples coming out of these colorful trees. Like, you're like, oh, yeah, that's just a postcard. That was every damn town we drove through. Every town. I told Cheryl there's no such thing as a best view. And you know how you're like, what was your favorite view? What was your favorite?
Right.
No such thing. Because every time we turned a corner, it was wow. And that held true for the marathon. So we were there running the Mount Desert Island Marathon. Jen was running it also. Kara, who we'd had lunch with, had run it before. This marathon, you'd think a marathon along the coast would be flat. Hilliest marathon I've ever run, by far. It was brutal, brutal hilly.
Okay.
Wicked awesome hilly. I don't know.
Which is why I don't run anything, let alone marathons.
But imagine we're running down this lane.
Oh, it's downhill? Oh, I could do that.
Well, oh no, we had our share of up too.
Oh,
but we're running down this lane and it's tree covered. It's a small enough road that the trees are...
Yeah, made it like a big canopy over the
yeah, road canopy over the road, and the wind is blowing and these orange leaves are falling in front of you and you've got this string of runners and these beautiful houses, and then you pop out along this sound and you're running down the sound and there's some smaller fishing boats, but then there's one of these huge industrial monster fishing boat, and right up along the shore, and we're running by. And the thing keeps going, burp, burp. And the guy gets on his loudspeaker system. Hey, guy in the yellow shirt, nice job. Guy in the yellow shirt, you're doing great. And he's right up against the coast. Hey, awesome. Woman in the pink, way to go. Doing great. Hey, everybody's looking great. Good job. Like, as you're going, it was so cool.
That's fun.
And then, you know, it's weird. They have barbecue at the finish, and being a guy that's transplanted to Texas for 7 years, New Englanders are so cute when they try to do barbecue. This
nice effort. Let's get back to the lobster.
I know. It was actually decent barbecue. Great effort. Good.
It's good after 26 and a half miles, right? You know,
absolutely.
Any sustenance at that point is appreciated.
Beer by the Atlantic Brewing Company, they have the best. I love these craft beer companies, the catchphrases they use. Mm-hmm. And theirs is save the ales.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. So you're along the Atlantic coast, save the ales. Mm-hmm. But the funniest thing, and I guess I'll leave the story here, was I love accents. I just love, you know, we went to France. We talked about the French accents. Some words are just so beautiful. You go to England, you could sit and listen to people from the UK talk forever. You know, my roommate in college from Australia, and moving to Texas, living in South Carolina, I just love dialects. I love the different ways people talk. And I was disappointed at first, and I think it was because initially we were in some fairly touristy areas. I didn't hear that main accent. I saw there were t-shirts and bumper stickers that said Bahaba, right? B-A-H-H-A-B-A, Bahaba. And I thought that was great, but I didn't hear it. But the more we dove into some of these smaller villages, the better it got. But the best one was, you know, this marathon's small enough that the roads are open and there's cars driving by. So you've got a little area on the edge of the road that they have marked off, but there's generally a car coming by once in a while. And Cheryl and I are running along, and all of a sudden, the woman behind me, I hear her say, Kabik. And I'm like, what's a Kabik? What is she talking about, Kabik? And I'm looking for this thing, a Kabik, and I realize that she's saying car back, but it's Kabik. And I can't say it the way she said it, but it was fantastic. There was a book in one of the shops, and it was Awesome Huge Toddler Goes to New York. And it's this huge kid that's like, you know, Clifford the Big Red Dog. He's this monster-sized kid. And you open it up, and the toddler is at a baseball game, and he's like, Mommy, hit a homer. And it's spelled H-O-M-A-H. And every single word was a New England accent. I wanted to buy that, but I wish I would have bought that. We don't have any young kids at home, but I like dialect so much. That was so fun. So thank you, New England, for a fantastic time. Maine, you are awesome. OG, you got to go. Mrs. OG's going to love it.
Okay. In my free time, I will be sure to make it. And then you're going to go from one coast, and this time next month, right, the middle of November, be on the complete opposite coast.
We're heading out to visit our partner in crime, Kathleen. The three of us having our big Stacking Benjamins 2017 planning meeting in Portland, where they might have beer.
They may. They allegedly. May.
We could have some creative Stacking Benjamins planning.
You're booking our flights, and you said, hey, I'm leaving on the 6 a.m. flight. I said, what are you talking about? That's awful early. And you said, well, I just want to get there to party. So we're there to work. I'm there to work. You're there to party. All right. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, we get more creative after a couple beers. All right, everybody. We'll see you later.